You're listening to the Philly Maker Faire podcast. My name is Laura Chanot.
And I am Valerie Chiguendo.
And I'm Jeremy DePrisco.
We're here celebrating the creators, builders, inventors, and artists that bring their visions to life at the Philly Maker Faire.
This week, we're talking with Kurt Bead of EI2O.
EI2O makes automated systems for growing mushrooms at home. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're so happy to have you.
Yes, we're excited. Maybe we can start with, when did you decide to begin working on mushroom growing systems and why?
Sure. This started, my partner, Tom Newber, and I started looking at this right at the beginning of COVID. And I'm sure everybody had the experience that, well, things don't actually show up, you know, like food when you expect them to. And so we began exploring manufacturing or making food at home. We started with vegetables and we actually made good progress there. But at the same time, we had spent enough time with mushrooms to see that that was a more interesting and I think a place where we could do better work.
So I'd love to hear more, not only about the mushrooms, but also a little bit about how the system works with the GrowBots and how that process happens.
Sure. So to start, most people are probably familiar with the idea of mushroom grow kits, which you can get at stores and so on. And they give you a box and you open the box and then there's a plastic cased mycelium block, right? And what you do is you cut a hole and you put some moisture in, and eventually you often get mushrooms out of it. And it's a system that is actually something that works, and it also again works with the current supply chain, which is you can have that box sitting somewhere for 6 months and then you can turn around and make something. There are a lot of issues though. The first is that you really are stuck with one or two types of mushrooms. I mean, you can do oysters, maybe shiitake, maybe one or two other ones. But the fact is, it's really hard to keep a mycelium block from doing something while it's just waiting around. And so obviously the people that have successfully done mushroom grow kits are the ones that have figured out how to make sure they don't go nuts. And it's kind of interesting. We got some kits that had clearly gone bananas. I mean, it exploded through the plastic and all kinds of weird things. Everybody offers a refund, obviously, and it's all okay. Mm-hmm. But we felt that there was an opportunity to grow, build a system that was easy to do three things. One is to have a pod containing a standardized grow medium. Okay, and again, this is the beginning of the difficulties in mushrooms, is that where do you put the spores for mushrooms to grow? And this grow medium, in our case, we usually use brown rice, is how you can say it's going to work. And what's interesting is that, again, to the extent that you all are familiar with the communities that are focused on growing mushrooms, everybody has a secret sauce. You know, you put this extra ingredient in and suddenly they'll grow better. And I think you start with a standardized, easily available substrate or grow medium that can consistently provide results. And I think we've done that in a standard container for it, which we've also done. So you start with that pod and that contains the growing medium. You add spores to that, and then you sit it in a grow chamber. And what we've tried to do is establish that process where you start with the introduction of the spore and then growing it to mushrooms in a way that I think that, you know, humans that often forget to feed their cat, you know, can actually do it at grow mushrooms without problems. And and that's what I'm proud of, where we got. We've solved those three issues: the grow chamber, the pod, and the substrate growing medium. Hmm.
Yeah, I know what you mean about those kits. My wife got one of those. It was like a log type thing, and as a gift one time. And she was a bit discouraged. She read the instructions and she's like, "This is like having a child," because of how much care it required. So she kind of got discouraged, and I think we didn't actually get into it at that point. But who's your main customer base for this? Who do you make your products for?
Well, I think we start with people that are interested in growing mushrooms, obviously, a kind of a baseline. But I think in particular, we're interested in offering this to people that are explorers, people that want to do something more interesting than growing some old golden oysters. And there's nothing wrong with golden oysters, although they're really boring. There's so many more interesting flavors of mushrooms that you can actually have easy access to. And I think with our system, it becomes practical to grow them. So, citizen scientists, people, amateur mycologists, I think one of the people that I've always been impressed with is a guy called William Padilla Brown, who you may or may not know. He's actually a local guy, and he figured out how to grow cordyceps. I mean, practically grow cordyceps, which is again a mushroom that has a weird, a very, very strange life story, and has been typically very difficult to grow. I think that if those kind of people that want to try to figure out how to grow things that in theory have not grown well or grown at all. I mean, if you want to make billions of dollars, use our kit, grow truffles. You're set. You're set for life. You'll make millions of dollars. So, and we don't want a piece of the action. Just let us know how it worked out. So.
So I know there's definitely some on the background tools and technologies that make it possible to grow to make the robots that you have. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. So, my background is hardware and software. I mean, and in particular, products in the IoT area, Internet of Things. So, we've made black boxes for transit systems. We've made, small home devices that do a variety of things. We applied that tech last year to this process because it's interesting that mushrooms are not vegetables. They don't grow the same way. It's all different. Having said that, I think we found a way to understand the system so that we could get more consistency out of growth. And that would take IoT devices that we attached to the growing chambers, our test growing chambers, that did really a good job of establishing temperature and humidity, which obviously are important, but also FEA, fresh air exchange. That's the, the in and out of air, which is a big deal for mushrooms, and CO2. With those four things, where we controlled them and monitored them, I think we understood best what works and what doesn't work. And of course, most things don't work. So we went through a lot of that, but that tech was crucial in us understanding what our next generation of robots were going to look like.
You've mentioned some of the challenges that, people are facing in general. What kind of tech challenges did you have sort of along the way?
Oh, it was awful. We were killing mushrooms all the time. I mean, but I think again, this is part of the maker process, right? Is that you have to try things, and there's a lot of lore in agricultural technology in general, which is wrong. And you don't know until you try something and try a variation to see if it works. We had a lot of theories about how this would all work, and a lot of them were just totally wrong. And we're still making those mistakes, and that's okay. I really think that, to me, the maker process that's most interesting is it's really cool to make something, but it's even cooler to make a process that makes things better. And we've been doing that for 2 years, and I think, I mean, one of the reasons we're talking is because we finally got to a design that doesn't cost as much as a microwave system and is actually also pretty easy to use. So we're
Nice.
excited about that. You know, I think generally is that the biggest mistake any maker makes is you make assumptions about stuff that are wrong, and then you have to backtrack. I think we've done a great job of removing most of those incorrect assumptions. So.
Yeah, I'm on your mailing list, and congratulations on your first batch of units that went out. I believe it went out recently. How have people responded so far?
They've been positive. I mean, the part that we worry about is could they grow mushrooms? And the answer is yes, they could grow mushrooms. That was great. But I think this is a classic example of a maker process, right? We wanted to make sure that it works. So it was definitely a belt and suspenders thing. We used really expensive sensors. We used the best materials, blah, blah, blah. And it worked. But it also cost a lot of money. I mean, it was not something that was practical for most people. And we were expecting that, by the way. But the important part was there's no point in simplifying something until you know that it works in the first place. So, and we did that. And I think that that group was fantastic in the sense that, you know, they were committed to making it work. They all did things that we didn't expect, continuously, in fact. And so that was all good news because, if our goal is to hopefully find people that are interested in this, but naive and haven't done it before, naive in the sense that they're not pros, that this will work at least most of the time. I think that no one in this business talks about something that works 100% of the time, but everybody wants to be better than average. So it's got to work at least like 80% of the time or something like that. And the last set of batches that we do ongoing batches of these things and testing, and we're around 80%, which is pretty good. It's a real come down from my past experience. It used to be, you know, I'd whip up a SAS system and we'd have a server running. It would run, you know, 99.99, but man, in this kind of area, 80% is really good. So
My at least. husband's a programmer, so I get
Yeah, yeah,
that.
yeah.
99.9, that's
Yeah,
about
that's
where he
at least
likes to
that's what we tell ourselves. Maybe it's not exactly that, but it much more is under control. I think growing systems are very complex and not really adequately understood. So you have to simplify what you're doing.
I want one. I'm your
I
novice. I've
know.
never had the box mushrooms or
Well, so
anything, but
yeah,
I'm a
well,
decent green thumb. You know, I can do like keep plants
we
alive.
so here's I'm showing this. I know I'm not supposed to show this because it's a podcast, but I mean, our new system is actually the price of a coffee maker. We're going to be doing an extended beta over the next month or two. So, you know, if
Very
you are,
cool.
I'm
That
actually sending out a note in our newsletter saying that if people want to be part of that beta process, they can do it. We'd be excited to have you. So.
And for our listeners, those links will be in the podcast notes. So make sure you get in on their mailing list if you're interested.
Okay, switching gears to that time before EI2O. I know you have a background, you said, in hardware, software, startups. And can you tell us more about this and how, in general, in your early days, you got into making?
I've had some very fortunate experiences in working with great companies and cool projects. And starting with, I mean, Apple back in the day, and with many other companies like Xerox and so on, everybody has a need, and they, big companies in particular, are much more interested in having you solve the problem than worrying about it. And we've been able to do that for many partners. And that involved building successive models of both hardware, software, and actually services as well. So it's been a great experience. I think that the most important part about this kind of stuff is having fun with a partner that really wants the answer and is willing to work with you to iterate through till you get it. We've done it a lot of times with different spaces, different technologies, and so on. So I think we were ideally set up for this. I hope to find out that people agree.
And when did you actually start baking?
Well, I mean, obviously, a long, long time ago. I think the key is you're making as long as you're doing something that you're not sure is going to work. That to me is kind of a definition right there. And if you can take that as a learning experience when it doesn't work, then you know you'll be making all the time. But it is kind of funny is that you really have to position it as, well, that really was a win, you know, even though it exploded and, you know, people were in pain and so on. But ultimately, it's for the greater good. I mentioned someone in passing, Elon Musk, just because what is fun about what he does, and I'm not talking about the rest of it, is that in SpaceX, he gives you access to every experiment that they do in building these huge rockets. And, you know, to me, it's like a palate cleanser in the morning. You watch 8 minutes in the morning. Well, what did he blow up recently? You know, but the fact is it works, right? You have to be able to test things to failure. Otherwise, you don't know if it's going to get better. And that's the hardest thing in the world to learn. It is, you get it kind of right. And you're thinking, oh God, don't touch anything. You know, and of course you really have to do the uncomfortable thing and hard to do.
I think a lot of makers in general talk about learning from those failures and learning from just the trial and error and what that often takes. And whether it's an artist or a super geeky guest, you know, we all sort of have that in common.
Yeah, I always used to admire, especially larger organizations that value that whole experimentation process. I worked for a Swiss company once and they would really fund and pour money into their engineers to just work in this experimental space. So they had all sorts of machines and gadgets, and they would just dedicate their time on building, experimenting. And then sometimes something would come out of it, other times it didn't, but then you still had that culture of just continuous experimentation, which I always love that.
Agreed. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's quite rare. That's why
it's very rare.
It's easier to start your own company and then partner with someone as opposed to doing it within a large organization, in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you can watch a lot more YouTube if you're part of a larger corporation. So that, unless it's a good corporation.
So what does an ideal day look like for you?
Well, I get up and I look at the latest batches to see how many got contaminated. And if not, how close they're doing to what we need to be doing. We update our databases for all the grows. I have a conversation with my partner, Tom Newbern, to see how his went. And we talk about what this means for the next batch of tests. We've been doing that consistently over the last, for a long time. But finally, we're moving beyond this because we're starting to productize. Most of our assumptions at this point have been either proven out or not. And I think the exciting part is we have a growing medium that works consistently. And we have a pod that works consistently. And the grow chamber is the last part that we've been working on. And I think we're about there.
Nice.
So, and of course, we'll send it out to our beta group and they'll explain why we're wrong. And that'll be fun. that's how it works.
I love that. So how are your mushrooms today?
pretty much. I mean, we have a Discord where, people that have our test units tell us how they're doing. I think what's going to be fun about the next batch is that we're going to be offering access to a citizen scientist app. So you actually can take pictures of each grow as it's going, because how do you know, right? I mean, without tracking this stuff, it's always kind of, gee, I think I did this last time. And we just gave up and we have databases now. This is the only way we could track it. And I'm averaging usually 16 units that I'm checking on a regular basis, if not more. So you got to use tech. So.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So what would be something that you're curious about within the local maker community? Is there anything you'd like to ask the local maker community? We have lots of other makers that we've interviewed and listened to the podcast, and we also have our Maker Faire coming up this year.
Well, I'm not sure if this is specific question to the maker community, but we've been looking for a community of makers that were more ag tech related, which is agricultural technology related. It's a very different space, right? It's not biotech. It's not, you know, hardware or software. But to me, it's a very interesting new place where I think there are amazing discoveries to be made all the time. I mean, it doesn't have to be mushrooms, although I think mycelium is just one of these things that is completely unexplored. I mean, the work that's been done in mycelium and mushroom growth is almost all in the last 40 or 50 years. And, you know, people don't even know how most of the basic stuff works yet. I should, of course, now I'm going to hear from people about that. But anyway, it's really hard to find any kind of definitive information. I should mention that, you know, we started with Paul Stamets, who you all may know. He was the guy that was the subject of the fungi, the fantastic fungus movie last year. He wrote the book on how to grow these things, and we use these books. And it's amazing to me how little data outside of his books there is. Mm-hmm. So we think that, you know, what we're going to be doing is adding value by creating real data about how things actually grow and succeed. Mm-hmm. And having a ag tech community that is a builder community would be so great. I've looked, and it seems to me that there's an opportunity there, just because the hardware is not complicated, right? You need sinks. Yeah, you need a refrigerator, but it's not that bad. So.
Yeah, I'm just putting in our notes here, and we'll put this in the podcast notes. We have a member of our maker community here, Sanjay Jain, who's with the Green Philly Makers. So we can definitely put you in touch with him.
That'd be great.
Our next question would be, where can our listeners and others learn more about EI2O?
Well, you can go to our website, EI2O.com, or you can look at our brand new Twitter account, which doesn't have any people on it yet, which is at EI2O_co. And obviously, if you sign up for our newsletter on the website, you'll be getting what used to be every half month, but has now become every month. But it's going out today. It is going out today. And you'll learn a lot more about what we're doing. I think, again, this next month is critical, because we're going to be doing the beta versions. And if we feel good about it, you know, we're going to go into mass production with the unit in September. So
wow, exciting.
Exciting. Exactly.
Jinx. Jinx,
exactly. Yeah. Mycelium willing. We'll see. You
know, so. Well, Cart Reed, thank you for joining us today. This has been a pleasure. And we look forward to hearing and seeing more about your products.
Thank you for inviting me, Laura, Jeremy, Valerie. I enjoyed it.
And get back to growing those mushrooms.
You got it. I'm back on it.
Thank you for listening to the Philly Maker Faire podcast. We're streaming on all platforms, so join us each week. Learn more about today's podcast at phillymakerfaire.com.
We're social, so keep in touch. You can find us on Twitter as PHLMake.
Also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest as Philly Maker Faire, all one word. And be sure to hit the subscribe button for future podcasts.
See you next week.
The opinions expressed by the guests of the Philly Maker Faire podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the hosts or producers. If you enjoy the Philly Maker Faire podcast, please consider making a donation at ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com. Search for JD Maker or go to ko-fi.com/JDMaker/tiers. Your support helps offset the costs of recording, editing, and maintaining the Philly Maker Faire podcast. Supporters at any of our tiers will receive a shout out on the podcast and via our social network. Thanks.